Pensacola's first choice for morning news, traffic, sports, and talk. The Pensacola Morning News with Andrew McKay. News Radio 92.3 AM 1620. Good morning, Pensacola.
Jim, you know my line, every shot is history. This man has created some amazing history.
Now, is this right, Davis? Because you follow professional golf far more closely than I do, which is a way of saying that anybody who follows it at all follows it more closely than I do. I pay attention once in a while for the last half hour, maybe something like that, of a tournament. He's the first Japanese competitor to win the Masters. Is it also true? Is that right? That's right.
Isn't that it? Is correct.
Also, to win any major?
I'm racking my brain because there have been a few Koreans who have won majors.
Okay.
I don't think any Koreans have won the Masters.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought he was Japanese. He's
no,
Korean?
He is Japanese. That's
okay.
Just, I'm like, right. Thinking about, like, yeah, because Koreans
any Asian
have won.
Players. Okay.
But as far as Japan, I'm pretty certain he's the only one that's won a major.
All right. And he played at 19 at the Masters. He was like
the low amateur.
Yeah. Which is the supposed to be theoretically like the worst person, the amateur that they allow to participate. Like, there's one of them. Is that right, that they allow?
Yeah, you had to make the cut in order to qualify because they did not have a low amateur this tournament.
All right. And how did Bubba do, by the way?
He made the cut.
Okay.
We'll put it there. He didn't, you know, he shot one over for the tournament, I believe.
Okay.
You know, he had a couple bad rounds, a couple decent rounds, but the bad rounds obviously outweighed the good.
Right. All right. Very good. So there you go. Masters done. 5:11 News Radio 92.3 AM 1620. And Saturday Night Live just continues to, they're obsessed with Matt Gaetz. I'll just put it that way. Now, the Open, the cold Open, was not about Matt, although it's kind of... I'll play it for you. They were talking about a fictional morning show in Minneapolis where you had the white woman and man on the right side, and then you had the black woman and man on the left side as the sort of morning large show gaggle of discussers talking about the Derek Chauvin trial. And basically, right, they were talking about the differences between white and black perception of the story, which is actually kind of a good premise. Because the basic premise was, we agree that this case was wrong. We agree that, you know, Derek Chauvin killed George Floyd. We agree. But then, you know, the disagreement was that the black people didn't think that the cops were going to get convicted, and the white people thought that they would. No, surely that can't go wrong. Oh, yeah, you know, definitely will. So then they go on to have, like, agreement, disagreement kind of moments.
Maybe you're right, but for the sake of our city, I hope justice is finally served.
Agreed.
I'm with you there.
Okay. Yes, absolutely.
The last thing we want is another riot.
Amen to that.
And I think we can all agree that no matter how bad things are, destroying property is never the answer.
I wouldn't say that.
It's just property.
There's insurance.
Well, sorry, but it's not just property. I mean, I just think protests should be nonviolent.
Well, thank you for that little note, Craig.
Yes. Yes. We'll be sure to tell the others, Craig Matthew Jorgensen.
Okay, that's not fair.
As in, you know, thanks for the note, white guy, right?
Okay, this is getting a little heated. Maybe we should move on.
I think this is a good dialogue.
Yep. I agree. Yes, this is how we reach an understanding, and, you know, at least we agree on the obvious stuff.
Yeah, like there's a glaring discrepancy in the way black people are treated by police.
Can't deny that.
Yes.
And we need concrete solutions to fix this problem.
That's what
no argument
all
there.
Along. Okay, and we start with reparations.
No, wait just a minute.
Oh, that was a good try.
I thought I could trick him
basically into agreeing to reparations in the moment. I mean, I thought it was actually fairly clever. I wasn't, you know, they're addressing perception differences that do exist and expectation differences that do exist. So as far as cold opens go for Saturday Night Live, this was actually fairly decent. And it's kind of funny, too, because they try to... They try to rope the, there's a black weatherman, you know, there's sort of two black people on the right, or two black people on the left, two black people on the right in the main discussion group. And then they try to rope the black weatherman in, and he clearly wants nothing to do with it.
You know what? Let's just go to the weather report. Calvin?
Sure, man. We're in Minnesota, so rest of April cold, May cold, June cold, July somehow hot as hell. Back to y'all.
Thanks, Calvin. Thanks, pal. Look,
I am not interested in being, because he'd already taken sides and they already got on him about that.
Okay, so what else is in the news, Joanne?
Well, more sad news this week. Unfortunately, we lost royalty yesterday.
Oh, I'm glad you brought this up.
Yes, the rapper DMX died. I was talking about the Prince.
The Prince?
Girl, Prince been dead.
Sorry, no, she means Prince Philip of England.
Meghan Markle's boyfriend?
He was married to Queen Elizabeth. I don't know who that is.
Yeah, he's the king.
Yeah.
Is he the king?
Yes. The white people are all busted up about Prince Philip dying. Black people are all busted up about DMX dying. You know, I don't know. Like I said, it was fairly clever. And then, of course, not to miss an opportunity, here's how it all ended.
There's got to be one news story we can all agree on.
What about Matt Gaetz?
Oh,
yes.
Oh,
guys.
But when you think about it, 17 ain't that young.
Now, man, see, that's why you in trouble. That's why you in trouble, Calvin. And
see, what I like about having the weather guy in there as the one who says, about 17, you know, there's people saying that, right? People saying, well, 17 is different than 13. And they're saying, you know, they're saying things like, well, you know, pay, but, which is kind of interesting because the left is famous for believing that prostitution should be called sex work. Right. It's a legitimate endeavor. It should be decriminalized. And people on the right, we tend to believe in, you know, marriage, at least theoretically. That's what conservatives believe is, you know, marriage, you should wait until marriage. And so everything outside of marriage or everything that competes with marriage sexually, whether it's premarital sex or whether it's paid for sex, anything like that is hostile to marriage and therefore a problem as far as the law is concerned. But now suddenly the left hates Matt Gaetz for allegedly, which he denies, in being involved in some kind of pay for sex, among other things. You know, again, he completely denies all this. So, but what they'll say is, well, he's a hypocrite. Well, and I think I would observe about Matt Gaetz. I've always considered Matt a libertarian rather than a conservative. I've said this on the air, I think, before. If I haven't, I apologize. But yeah, I mean, if you look at his policy positions, when it comes to cultural issues, he's much more with libertarians than he is with conservatives. Look at marijuana, look at, you know, gay issues, look at things surrounding sex and private behavior. He's much more likely to side with liberals or libertarians than he is with conservatives. So I'm not sure that you can say he's a hypocrite on any of this stuff. Obviously, we're still in the middle of a conversation where we don't know a lot of the facts because it's all allegations and rumors and as reported bys. But anyways, as I said, they brought him in and then they got him on Weekend Update, too, like three different times. So we'll talk about that maybe later. 517 on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. I'm Andrew McKay. Here on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620. Did you get any hail over the weekend? I mean, at my house, we just had a lot of rain and wind and get woken up a bunch of times. But I'm seeing pictures all over social media on Sunday morning of hail that people got, like in Cantonment. And of course, you know about Emerald Republic getting their roof ripped off and probably out of business for a couple of months. Pretty bad damage. The Roger Scott tennis complex had, I would say, medium damage in the sense that there's one of their tent canopies got ripped off, one of the shade structures, and then also the middle row of hard courts, the north side, that chain link fence was completely blown down. And they were in the process of putting it back up. I don't think it'll be that big of a thing to repair, but it was interesting to see where you had damage and trees down. Like one of the trees, I noticed when I was coming home yesterday from, we were biking, you know, Tiger Point, and we're coming across I-10, getting off at Davis Highway at the exit, all of a sudden there's a tree almost in the road. I'm like, oh, that was not there before. Now, they'd already cut it, so it was safe, but it's the kind of thing that it sneaks up on you pretty quick, and you're like, oh, that's all the way into the shoulder, and that would have been blocking traffic before that. So they got it cleaned up, but it just kind of reminds you that a lot of trees down. The woman had a tree down in her mobile home, you know, just... It was bad. Saturday was bad. 521 on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Mark Jacobs in the newsroom with our headlines. Mark?
The governor of Minnesota says his state's mourning another life of a black man taken by law enforcement. Police say a 20-year-old shot as he tried to leave the scene of a traffic stop yesterday, sparking tense protests outside a police station in Brooklyn Center. Meanwhile, the trial of a former Minneapolis police officer starts week three today. As those protests over a police shooting unfolded nearby, Derek Chauvin, accused of killing George Floyd last year, the defense expected to call its first witnesses later this week.
In that Brooklyn case with the guy in the car, like, I looked and we barely know anything, right? Like, it was a traffic stop. He was apparently out with the cops. He had a warrant against him. Also, we don't know what for. You correct me if I get any of this wrong. He got back into his car. I guess there's one claim that he was shot outside the car. The police say they shot him getting back into the car and he drives off and crashes. That's basically what we know, right?
That's basically all I've all
so
I know,
little.
All aware of.
It's such scant information. All right, go ahead, Mark.
Egyptian archaeologists celebrating the discovery of a 3,000-year-old lost golden city.
For the first time ever, a lost city rising from the sand, buried for millennia, untouched, almost intact. Uncovered by Egypt's most famous archaeologist, Dr. Zahi Hawass. It's the largest industrial city ever found in Egypt.
That's NBC's Molly Hunter. The site, uncovered in the desert near Luxor, dates back to the reign of, oh Lord, let's see, Amenhotep III.
No, that's good. That's right. I think that's right. But it wasn't discovered in a map room with a stick and a piece of remanufactured jewelry with a red jewel in the middle of it, was it?
I don't think so.
Named after a state?
I'm not sure.
Okay, all right.
Yeah, Harrison Ford, nowhere nearby.
All right, very good. Mark, thanks so much for the update. 523 here on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Oh, I like the way you put this earlier, Mark. To absolutely no one's surprise, Sheriff Morgan has refiled to run for mayor in 2022. Yep. So I will say I had been handicapping this at 70 to 80%. I didn't think it was a for sure thing that he was going to run. Mayor Robinson, of course, had said previously that, you know, he was 100% sure that Sheriff Morgan was going to run, that he'd been talking around with people and that it was just a matter of time to announce it. My only thought was, having talked to Sheriff Morgan one time, you know, after the change of command ceremony, that I thought, I don't know. And I hadn't heard from him recently. And I wondered if maybe he wasn't enjoying family and retirement a little bit more than he had let on. But, you know, obviously, he has now filed, and it isn't really a surprise. What's going to be interesting is the size of this field. What was it, six people last time around? I think it was six for both the District 2 County Commission, which would also be up next time around, and possibly all five, depending on how these laws in Tallahassee go. But at least District 2 and District 4 are going to be up. That's, you know, east half of Pensacola is District 4. The west side of Escambia County is District 2, west and south. So we'll see. Those... Previously, District 4 had six contenders. The mayor had six contenders. District 2 had, well, I guess depending on how you count, three, but two Republicans, and we know it's a Republican district. So that's really all there. I would expect, like, we had Karen Sindel on the show on Friday for the wrap, and she's one who may run for that seat. I would not be surprised. She said, what'd she say, six to eight people would run for it? I think she's probably right about that. The question is just going to be, who else is going to run for mayor? You know, I still think that Lumen May is, I mean, I never say 100%, but, you know, 99.9, you know, I think he would very much like to be the mayor of Pensacola. I think he probably would have tried to run last time if Grover Robinson hadn't sort of nudged him out of the way by filing before he did. I think, frankly, he was thinking about it. I'm not the only one who thinks that. But so Commissioner May and Sheriff Morgan, and then, I mean, I don't know who else. Drew Buchanan, I think, still eyes that seat as something that he might well have. We've, you know, the PNJ confirmed, and we had said before that we thought it was a real likelihood that the owner of Perfect Plane, all of a sudden his name?
D.C. Reeves.
Thank you, D.C. Reeves, Jim Reeves' son, that he was going to run. I think he's very likely to run. It's, you know, and so that's three. Oh, by the way, the Clay Ingram thing, that's a joke. Clay doesn't live in Escambia County anymore. He's gone. You know, he never lived in the city to begin with. So that was an April Fool's joke that somebody put. I think that might have been Alex Andrade who put out that April Fool's, which is kind of a funny one. So that's not happening. But there's lots of other people who could potentially run. So we'll see. You know, it's a long, not that long. Give it a year. I mean, it's August of next year, right? 526 on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. I'm Andrew McKay.
I've been driving all night, my hands wet on the wheel. There's a voice in my head that drives my heel.
Good morning, 528 News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. The Supreme Court told California, no, you're bad at this. What it was about was a rule that prohibited in-home religious worship involving more than three different families or three different households. Right. So the idea is to prevent during COVID, the spread of COVID in homes, which is one of the primary culprits or was historically. Now it seems to be youth sports is one of the big areas that we're concerned about because, you know, your average case ages have dropped. And even though cases are spreading, the number of people showing up in the hospital or dying, which is still relatively high, is not as high as you would expect on the basis of the cases. Anyway, back to the Supreme Court. Five justices. John Roberts again siding with the liberals. That's become a bit too much of a theme for my taste. But the argument was that they are treating religious people differently than secular businesses. Secular businesses, which do not have this same restriction, but private religious ceremonies and homes that do. Now, the other side argues that retail stores like salons and movie theaters are not the right comparison to an in-home religious service. It would be other in-home events, which apparently are all prohibited from bringing more than three households together at the same time. But the majority that wrote on this, and interestingly, the majority wrote, I think this is the one that was written generically, which is odd. The Supreme Court normally doesn't issue anonymous opinions, but they did in this case because the five justices, I guess, believed that it was so clear. But if the state limits secular gatherings in homes to three households, it's complied with the First Amendment. That's what Elena Kagan wrote in the dissent. But the brief or in the unsigned opinion, it says that the Supreme Court's decision in earlier challenges made several points clear, including that government regulations are subject to heightened scrutiny whenever they treat secular activities more favorably than religious activity. Whether that is done poorly or rightly is not the point. Religion, anytime you start regulating a religious activity, there's a really high bar to clear if you're going to do that, even in the name of public health. The First Amendment has pretty good teeth. That's what the Supreme Court said.
I'm Jim Chesko with Your Money Now. Many Americans have received new $1,400 stimulus checks in recent weeks, and that could prove to be very good news for retailers, including the restaurant world. A new report from Rabobank projects that the new stimulus will help lift restaurant revenues by 20 to 30% over the next several weeks. Ford is confirming that some early models of its all-electric 2021 Mustang Mach-E have a battery issue. A technical service bulletin the automaker filed with the Highway Traffic Safety Administration indicates that it's a problem that has the battery discharging even as it's plugged in to be charged and informing owners via their Ford Pass app that the Mach-E is in deep sleep mode. Ford says the issue affects vehicles built before February 4th, although it didn't say how many. Gaining ground four of the five sessions, stocks had a pretty good week. The major indexes rose anywhere from 2% in the case of the Dow Jones Industrials to 3.1%. That was the NASDAQ Composite. In the Friday session, both the Dow and S&P earned fresh closing highs. That's Your Money Now.
Dr. Maya. My eyes
Thanks for having me. Thank you, Amy. Thank you to my amazing fiance, Ginger. I love you with all my heart, and I can assure you the best is indeed yet to come.
Yeah, Matt Gaetz gave his first public performance or appearance, really, since the interaction that he did with the interview that he did with Tucker Carlson the day after or the day of, really, these reports broke against him. This was at Women for America First, a rally on Friday.
Keep fighting! After the Russia hoax, the knockoff Ukraine impeachment sequel, and an election that was stolen as a consequence of illegal last-minute changes to the rules, folks have sort of gotten to know that I'll take on the establishment of both parties, and I wouldn't have it any other way.
Sounds pretty much like the Matt of old, right? The kind of the tone that we're all accustomed to.
This past week has been full of encouragement. From President Trump, Marjorie Taylor Greene, and Jim Jordan, to the MAGA nation that shares so much love. So let me assure you, I have not yet begun to fight. For the country I love and for the nation that I know benefits from America First principles. I'm built for the battle, and I'm not going anywhere.
So if you were hoping for contrite, apologetic, weak-kneed Matt Gaetz, you did not get that at all on Friday.
The smears against me range from distortions of my personal life to wild, and I mean wild, conspiracy theories. I won't be intimidated by a lying media. And I won't be extorted by a former DOJ officials and the crooks he is working with. The truth will prevail.
Now, it's kind of interesting because the event that he spoke at, Women for America First, obviously a very pro-Trump women's organization, and specifically a women's organization in the midst of these allegations. And what he did for the next, I don't know, 8 minutes or so was talk about the female staffers that work for him, that he has helped raise into positions of leadership, and just in general, the way he's treated women. And it's a, here's the funny thing, when somebody alleges sexism or sexual assault against you, it's like there's no defense. It's like when somebody alleges racism, how do you defend against that? It's really difficult because all of the moves you would make, you know, all of the efforts that you would give in order to try to defend yourself have been predetermined to be illegitimate. You know, it's kind of this old, the old joke is, you know, you're a racist. No, I'm not. I got black friends. You know, well, okay. If you were a racist, would you have a lot of them? I mean, that's actually a kind of a legitimate thing that you might say. No, I got lots of people that I get along with of other, you know, that, but it becomes a joke, even though it isn't really. And so this idea that he would tout the way he has treated women in his office or the way he has worked with female staffers, I mean, that seems like about the best you could come up with. And what would be the better? You know, what would be your other way of doing this after female staffers put out a statement last week that they've never seen any of this kind of nonsense from him before? So anyway, here are some of the stories that he told on Friday.
This is a Women for America First event, and it seems like the perfect place to celebrate the excellence of some America First women. And so I want to take this opportunity to tell you about some of my heroes. Isabella is an immigrant to our country. She was born in Brazil, and she ended up in Washington, D.C. because if she was to have the American experience, she wanted it to be in the capital city. She loves the monuments and the architecture and what those things say about the ambition of a great nation. What do people do when they need jobs in Washington, D.C.? Well, they go to Capitol Hill. Isabella applied for any job that was available, and she ended up working for Congresswoman Sheila Jackson Lee. After that, she ended up working for a Democrat impeachment manager who let bloodlust for Trump cloud common sense and the facts. One evening, as my staff and I were working late, she showed up at our door. "I'm tired of being on the America Last team," she said. "I cannot support the left-wing agenda. They just hate President Trump, and he's doing a good job. Would there be a spot for me on your team?" I was somewhat surprised that a Democrat staffer would reach out to our office for employment over more moderate or more establishment figures. I've watched you work. You take chances on people, Isabella said to me. We were criticized by some in the right-wing media for the hire. Some even said she was a spy sent to bring me down. Today, Isabella is a member of my senior staff, and we work closely together on a daily basis. She had the courage to jeopardize her career just by talking to me. And now my constituents, the people of Florida, the people of this great country, are better off as a consequence of her resolve and her brilliance.
So that was one of the stories that he told. He told several, and I thought it was interesting because thinking about it, I thought, well, you know, he really does have quite a few females who work on his staff, and he is always talking them up. He's always praising them for the work they do. I don't know Isabella personally. I do know Don and Jillian personally, and here was his comments about Don Blaylock.
Democrat staff might be an unusual place to find greatness, but sometimes we can uncover motivation in unusual places. Let me tell you about Don. Don has never worked before in politics or government. She was a legal clerk and a hospice care coordinator and a very tough mother. Some rich people in my district in the business community said, I was insane to hire Don to be my district director, the most forward-facing job in my office. I figured someone who could manage the logistics of litigation and also provide comfort and care to dying people was precisely the type of person that I would want fighting for the folks back home. The downtown crowd said, I should consider a better known leader with political connections. All of the recommendations they sent me were predictably men. I take the words of Margaret Thatcher to heart. If you want something said, get a man. If you want something done, hire a woman.
And by the way, I think I call her Don Blaylock. She's Don McCardle. I don't know. There's a friend of mine on Facebook that's Don Blaylock, so I apologize for that. Anyway, Don McCardle, she's great. She is. She's real. I mean, I've met her at a variety of events. We've talked many times. She's always involved in the coordination of the local stuff that he does here. And he says, look, if it weren't for her, a lot of the people in my district that have gotten, you know, problems solved, they wouldn't have gotten those problems solved.
Dawn has recovered millions of dollars for people in my district who were unfairly treated by government. She helped veterans restore their benefits that they had earned. She even one time helped me rescue school children that were stuck in Costa Rica and had lost their passports. Mama Dawn, we all call her. And all she needed was a chance to lead a great team. A chance that too many women are passed up for. She is the grit and soul of our operation.
And then there was another one in between there, but he also then talked about his current chief of staff, communications director, Jillian Lane Wyant.
Jillian is a military spouse. I mentioned before I have a special spot in my heart for military families. Her husband had been overseas in combat, and his return to civilian life required her to spend her days in California. She had paused her career to support her husband's, but she was itching to get back in the game, and for good reason. She is the very best at what she does. So we tried something crazy, unheard of in 2018, something called remote work, where someone could actually be in a different place than the office and contribute their effort, contribute their talent, and make the operation better. Before hiring Jillian to be my communications director, I had been on television once in my first 10 months in office. Since hiring her, I've been on more than the MyPillow guy. And that says a lot more about her than it does me. She never wanted to be a chief of staff. Communications was her expertise. But I saw in her this tremendous potential to listen and lead and motivate and inspire. And she is the hardest working person I know, leading by example. I may be biased, but I think she's the best chief of staff on the Hill.
So just it's a very interesting approach, right? It's a question like, how exactly do you defend yourself if you're innocent? How do you defend yourself against allegations of sexism or being a sexual predator or trafficking or paying for prostitutes? You know, the stuff that people are alleging, which, again, without evidence yet, all rumors of, although they're, you know, I don't know, this trip and the Venmo, I don't know, just give me good evidence. Give me hard, firm evidence of anything. That's what I'm kind of waiting for. And until then, look, I've known Matt a long time. I've never, I don't, you know, some people, they, some people, when a story like this comes out, you kind of go, yeah, I could have seen it. I never had that reaction with Matt. Now, that doesn't mean he's innocent. I don't know. But I've known him a long time, and it would surprise me tremendously. Because he doesn't make comments, make jokes. He doesn't, you know, just not like that. I mean, he makes jokes about a lot of things, but he doesn't make jokes about women. You know, it's not the kind of thing where you're like, well, yeah, I kind of see that. It just doesn't fit. So on Friday, he gives this speech in which, as you heard, he talks a lot about how he treats women in his office, which, again, they came out with a statement saying, yeah, this is all a bunch of bunk. We've never seen anything like this. 437-1620, 437-1620, whether this is an adequate defense, whether this moves people. By the way, there was a survey that came out over the weekend or Friday, something like that, saying that the majority of people in this district believe it to be false. In the vicinity of like 60-65% believe it to be false. Another 20% or so aren't sure. And then there's about 20% who think that it's true, in that vicinity, 19%, something like that. And so, and that's of Republicans, by the way, were the ones surveyed. So roughly 80%, if you put the two numbers together, roughly 80% of people either believe that it's false or aren't sure and think he should stay in office. So when he says he's got the support of his constituents, I mean, clearly, it's certainly at least at the Republicans, and they're the ones who elect him every time, right? 549 here on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. I'm Andrew McKay.
Publishers of the Captain Underpants books have canceled a spinoff of the popular series, saying it promoted, quote, passive racism, which is not what I expected a guy called Captain Underpants to get canceled for.
That was just for you, Davis.
Starbucks has launched a new eco-friendly program called Borrow a Cup, in which customers return their cup after finishing their drink so the store can use it again. And Dunkin' Donuts plans to compete with this promotion by not doing that.
Five fifty-two on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Mark Jacobs in the newsroom with our headlines. Mark,
I like that. Compete by not doing.
They're going to compete by not doing that.
Half of those between the ages of 50 and 64 in the U.S. have now gotten at least one coronavirus vaccine.
The U.S. setting a new record, 4.6 million shots in arms on Saturday. More than one in four adults now fully vaccinated. But with the more contagious UK variant spreading, some hospitals are again stretched thin.
That's NBC's Alice Barr. Overall, CDC says more than 114 million Americans have now had at least one dose. Over 68 million fully vaccinated.
And unfortunately, Florida is now lagging the country. We are not at the forefront any longer in terms of overall vaccination rates. It's I just had it in front of me. The country is at 36 and 22. So 36 have had one shot. 22 have had their full series, either the one-shot J&J or the two-shot Pfizer or Moderna. The Florida numbers are 31 and 20. And so we are behind, and it's just, you know, it's the young people. Young people don't want to get vaccinated, apparently, and which I understand. Just I wish they didn't have that view, but go ahead, Mark.
District leaders continuing their push for D.C. statehood this week. A House committee will mark up and vote on a statehood bill on Wednesday. Full House vote could happen as early as next week. NASA has delayed its Mars helicopter. First flight was set to take its final major test today, but the rotor blades abruptly stopped working, and that's bad for a helicopter.
In layman's terms, that's not good.
And here's the part. This final experiment is meant to prove that rotorcraft technology can work on the red planet. So far, not going very well.
Well, you know, what they say, you know, about science is sometimes you learn what doesn't work.
That's right.
And hopefully they figure out how to make it work. But if the goal was to prove that it can happen and this fails, you'd have evidence, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or what Thomas said is, what is the old Edison quote is always, you know, I found 9,000 ways to not make a light bulb. Let's hope it's not that, right?
Right.
All right, Mark, thanks for the update. 554 on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. So I talk about Frontier Motors all the time. You hear Dave Ramsey talk about it all the time. And I use this phrase, serving the community. And you say, well, look, how does a used car dealer serve the community? Well, in all kinds of ways, big and small. But just like one example, okay? If you're going to go buy a used car, get a Carfax, right? You're going to go to them. They give you a car. Like, they bring out the paperwork for the car, like all of the prices, all the costs, everything, bottom line, out-the-door price is what you talk about. And then here's your Carfax. Like, it's always. That's how they always do it. But even if you're not buying a car from them, even if you're shopping at a different used car dealer or even a private individual, you should always get a Carfax. It's not the end-all, be-all of buying a used car. I think you ought to get a used car inspection as well. But that's a good starting point. You should never buy a car without getting a Carfax. So if they don't give you one to begin with, first of all, you kind of wonder why. But if they don't, just call Frontier and be like, hey, Andrew's always talking about how you can give me a Carfax with a VIN number. And they're like, sure, what is it? Okay, here you go. They'll give you a Carfax. So you will know in buying that car. Now, why would they do that for you to buy a car from somebody else? Serving the community. It's easy for them to do. Helps inform you as a consumer. Helps make sure that you don't buy a car that you regret later on down the road. I mean, it's that simple. So that's why we say serving the Pensacola community for more than 25 years. Frontier Motors right behind that big buffalo on Beverly Parkway. Be sure to tell them Andrew McKay says hi. Kind of an interesting one. And I'll be honest with you, I'm a little torn on it. And, you know, I always say in radio, just have an opinion. Well, I mean, sometimes my opinion is I'm not sure. And this is an I'm not sure moment. The city of Las Vegas is looking at banning ornamental grass. Not decorative marijuana, but like lawn grass, okay? Because the idea is, they're saying, it takes up a lot of water, and unless people are actually walking on it, like, you know, playing tennis or going to a park or something like that, or playing golf, whatever. Although I guess there's not that really many grass tennis courts. But anyway, the point is, if people are not walking on it, like on a lawn, then there's no need to have it. So they're saying, like, in median strips or in places where it's just purely decorative, that they don't need it. So I'm torn because I get that you're in a desert and so you don't want to have water. But as a resident of any community, green is just an important color. You know, it's really for happiness. Like, to see green all over the place. I remember one of the things when you go to Ireland, it's just everybody who goes to Ireland says the same thing. It's overwhelmingly green. It's impossible to describe it to you if you haven't been there. It just is that way. And there's something invigorating about it. Well, you go to a desert community like Las Vegas, or I lived in Phoenix for a long time, and there's a certain kind of soul sucking that constant brown does to you compared to having these green areas. But I kind of take the view that, like, look, it's Las Vegas. If they want to do this, you know, if they think they can save water, which is always a problem for them, and they can, you know, they've actually been incentivizing people to get rid of their grass for years. They've been paying people to degrass, essentially. So I'm a little torn on this. I don't like the idea of getting rid of the green spaces. It is kind of their thing, not my thing. But I will say this in the article, my favorite part of this article, this was an AP article. The proposal is part of a turf war waged since at least 2003. Well done, AP. That's pretty good. This was when the Water Authority was banning people from the developers from putting green lawns in. We'll be back in just a minute.